Perkins and Spiegel Show.
Proximity to me over fame and fortune is definitely what most financial advisors would recommend.
Afternoons on the Score.
Strike one makes the difference. I know this guy can throw a lot of strikes. I face him a lot, and he has good stuff. But what I like the most from him is the way he goes through his business. He's always wondering about the game. He's always asking, and that's something that I really appreciate. And today, he basically was strike one almost to every hitter, and that opens a lot of doors. He executed with two strikes really good until the end. And I think he did a really great job.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show. Afternoons on the Score.
That was Wilson Contreras on new Cubs starting pitcher Trevor Williams after his first start, just gushing at all the things that he liked about him. I'm guessing, and that was a lot of things, I'm guessing our next guest, Speaks, has an even longer list of things that he likes about Trevor Williams, given that he's, you know, his father. It's an unbelievable story, and one that I think many, many people in our audience, even if you are not a sports parent, your son is not really into sports. My son is 14 months old, so he's barely into anything. But
Danny, my theory is that there's a Little League dad inside of all of us, you know, or a Little League mom inside of all of us, whether you have the kid or not. If you love baseball or sports, then eventually, you know, we're all going to have a moment where we can relate to our next guest.
So Trevor Williams' father, Rich Williams, joins us now on the Alpamonte Nissan Hotline, Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park. And Rich, thank you so much for the time. First of all, this story is just, I think it tugs a lot of people at the heartstrings. We'll get into the specifics here in a minute. But how are you doing today? Thank you for the time.
Danny and Matt, I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me. Not sure when the last time you had a Little League dad on, but I'm here to just share my little story, and certainly proud of my son, Trevor.
So let's start for you why it's extra special to see Trevor pitching not only in the big leagues but on the Cubs, your connection to the Cubs and why this was extra special for you.
I've been a Cub fan my whole life. I was born and raised on the south side, 45th and Cicero, and for some reason I was always with the Cubs. And my brother was always with the White Sox. Nonetheless, as I moved on, I went to Brother Rice High School, followed the Cubs. When I was in eighth grade, I cut school 2 weeks, or really 3 days, Friday, Monday, and Tuesday, to watch Ernie Banks hit his 500th home run. I was an Andy Frain usher for 4 years at Wrigley Field. And yesterday I heard I was one of my cousins, you guys suggested, or somebody suggested I wear an Andy Frain usher outfit to the game, one of the home games. And I might do that. I still have that uniform. But I went to, I graduated from Eastern Illinois after I got done with the Marine Corps. And I got accepted to three law schools. I picked Des Moines for Drake Law School. I picked Des Moines because it was a AAA team of the Cubs. That's how crazy I was. So nonetheless, my son raised my son in San Diego, California. I moved from Iowa. I got really smart and dropped a guy 25 to life, and he was going to kick me and said he's going to kill me. I said, he ain't going to find me. So I wanted to live where people vacation. I live in San Diego, raised my three boys in San Diego, and I became a Little League dad. And I had three very active D1 athletes. And it worked out really well. One of them, two were swimmers and one was a baseball player. And it moved on. My son goes to Arizona State. He was a great I was a Little League coach. I was a Little League dad. And my son just progressed. Got drafted second round by the Marlins, which was great because I could still cheer for my Cubs. He got traded to the Pirates, and he calls me up and he says, Dad, I got traded. I said, well, you're a AAA guy. You don't have much of a choice. And he got traded to the Pirates. And I said, well, dude, I go, that's division. What are we doing here? He goes, I know, Dad. I know your love of the Cubs, but you got to switch now. You got to become a dad first and a Pirate fan. And I said, okay, I'll be a dad and I'll be a Pirate fan. So last 4 years, I've been cheering for the Pirates, going to a couple Cub games. We never Trevor pitched over there at Wrigley Field. This last offseason, he gets designated, which is a euphemism, and the Pirates means they can't afford to keep you. but he was designated, and then he had several teams bidding on him. And again, there's 30 teams, and the teams are bidding on him. It ended up being three teams. I won't name the other two, but obviously one was the Cubs. But the other two were way, money-wise, was way above the Cubs. And these deals are done at literally 10, 12 midnight on a Saturday. At 10 o'clock, I talked to my son and the other team that was in the number one running. I said, we made a lot of decisions. Again, he's with his agent, and I'm on the sidelines. But I said, hey, the money they're offering you, you're going to be a high school coach when this is over. Take it. You know, it's 8 or 10 years of salary. Just take it. Two hours later, he calls me up and he said, I took the job. I said, that's great. I'm happy for you. You know, we'll move on and we'll see what happens with your career. And he says, Dad, I'm a Cub. And I said, get out of here. So out of 30 teams, I got blessed. He's with the Cubs, and now I get to cheer for the Cubs.
That
openly. So that's my story.
It's a great story.
That is a great, great story. Rich Williams, the father of Trevor Williams, is our guest. How cool is that to have it all come full circle like that? Now, the Cubs pitched your son on some very specific stuff. Like, they knew about the pitch usage that he needed to change. They knew about a mechanical fix that he needed to change. Did you know about that? And were you part of, like, trying to say, hey, look, they know what they're doing? Or was that independent of your push or your desire for him to be a Cub?
My push is to let him, you know, let him be at the location that will set him up to succeed. And that's what I wanted. I wanted him to succeed. The Cubs made a great pitch. You know, their lab, they talk about it. The pitching coaches got a great reputation. But I stay out of the minutia. I talk to him after every start, of course. But I'm out of the minutia, but I'm glad they set him up to succeed. Now that I'm reading what they're doing and how they're doing it, I'm really, really excited about what he did. I mean, his first start was absolutely almost perfect. Second start was inches away from being a better game. So he's at a place where he's going to succeed. I'm really happy with that.
We're talking to Rich Williams, Trevor Williams' father, new starting pitcher for the Cubs, a lifelong Cubs fan himself. And, you know, it's when Matt was saying, let's have him on, I was like, yeah, it's totally cool. But, you know, he's pitching on the road. Find out if he's going to the game. And then he came back and was like, yeah, he's going to the game. But now I was reading more about you. You're going to go to every game, and it's a little bit more special. I know you don't want to dwell on your diagnosis, but that side of the story, there's a bit of an urgency for you to be sure that you're following each and every one of these starts in person now, isn't there?
Right. I quit trying to be the richest man in the cemetery. And for every one of your dads that are riding in the car or wherever they're at listening to this, you know, you got to take a look in the mirror, and you don't want to be the richest man in the cemetery. I got diagnosed with double B-cell lymphoma back in 2015, and that was in September of 15. And I was given 60 to 90 days left to live if I did not take aggressive treatment. And aggressive treatment to a doctor means they're going to try and kill you with chemo and radiation. And if you live through it, you're gonna survive. So back in August or September of 15, I just wanted to make it to Thanksgiving. And I had my other son at University of Cal Berkeley, who was a swimmer, and I wanted to watch him at the NC2A and so forth. And so as it turned out, I did survive. I still have some issues, but nonetheless, and that went into 16, 17. I've gotten better and better. In fact, on Wednesday of this week, I've got another oncology appointment. That's just the 6-month follow-ups to be told that, you know, you still have no evidence of recurring disease. But nonetheless, I now, once you get given that type of diagnosis, you smell the roses. You really do. I know it's a cliche, but I wake up and watch the sunrise and I wink at the sunset and I say, not today, you know, the old saying with the, in the Game of Thrones, what do we say to the God of Death? Not today. So I will attend, I will see each one of Trevor's 30 or 31 starts this year. I'm literally sitting in Las Vegas coming back from Pittsburgh, which is whatever, is a long problem, but nonetheless, it's part of traveling. So on Friday, I'll fly back from San Diego into Chicago. I'll land in the afternoon, watch Friday night's game if I get there on time, and then Saturday he pitches, I'll jump on a plane, go back to San Diego, and rinse and repeat for the following week. I think it's Atlanta or something like that. So
that's amazing. That's amazing. Congrats on being cancer-free and best health to you as you do that. And it's inspiring to hear somebody make that choice and do what you're doing, to see your sons and to see young Trevor pitch out there. Trevor Williams' father, Rich, is our guest. So you've always been a Cubs fan, always a baseball guy. I know. Are you still the public address voice of Rancho Bernardo High School baseball, Rich? And so this is – baseball is in your blood, clearly. You love it. Did he love it? Talk to the aspiring Little League dads out there. You know, like, did your son love it when he was little? And how much did you push him? Did you have to push him to get into it?
Well, here's a great story. About I was the announcer once Trevor started. Again, I have three boys, so I was, you know, the board of directors for the Little League for like 9 years or whatever the math is. But I was the Rancho Bernardo High School has a lot of guys, D1, not D1, a lot of pro ball players came out of it, pro baseball players came out of it. And I was the announcer for 11 years. I just can't get enough baseball. That's my problem. And obsession, I guess maybe it's a problem that's obsession. So I was there. Trevor, this is for all the Little League dads out there, or the guys that are playing high school ball with your sons. Trevor was cut from the varsity team freshman year. Again, Cole Hamels went to Rancho Bernardo High School. Hank Blaylock and all. There's a whole slew of them. But nonetheless, Trevor was cut from the varsity team. And I had to pick him up from school because he didn't have a driver's license, and he's got sitting on the corner with all his gear, and he was really upset. And I said, "What's wrong?" I said, "Did you quit?" He goes, "No, I got cut." And I said, "Well, I'm sorry to hear that." He says, "I'm going to JV." And then I smiled because I didn't want him around with a bunch of seniors anyway as a freshman. But it taught him a couple things. It taught him that he said, "It's never going to happen to me again, Dad." And this is a background story. Trevor was a catcher most of his life. And then he came home from high school one day and he said, "I'm going to be a pitcher." Now, catchers always are got the great arms anyway. And I says, "What do you mean you're going to be a pitcher?" He goes, "Dad, they got 13 pitchers. They only had two catchers. I'm going to make it as a pitcher. You just watch." And I said, "Okay, I'll watch." You know, winking at myself going, "Yeah, sure, kid." And sure enough, he went on then to switch over from a catcher to a pitcher. And then at Arizona State, he was drafted. He was heavily recruited. Ended up at Arizona State. I'm not San Diego State. Arizona State. And the rest, again, is history. He drafted, and I'm pinching myself in being a
we
Cub.
We can tell, Rich. You're beaming through the phone, and you're clearly so proud. And I think there's so many parents, you know, moms and dads who sat at swimming meets and ice rinks and basketball courts and cold practices and drove long ways and all of that stuff. I'm just interested also in, like, you know, the sports parents. You hear all the time about forcing kids to do things that they didn't want to do, like Spiegs was alluding to, or, you know, yelling at the refs or whatever. Like, if Rich Williams, the father of Trevor Williams, who says you don't want to be the richest man in the cemetery and you're going to spend your money traveling to every one of your starts now that your kid's in the big leagues and on the Cubs, what's the advice that you would give Little League parents out there on the best way to be a sports parent?
First of all, you start off with reading Tiger Woods' dad's book about what he did with his son, Tiger. And I did read that. And Tiger, for all the parents who are listening, Tiger Woods' dad said, if you're meeting your son at the door with two buckets of balls and saying, "Sons, let's go out and hit these buckets of balls," your son isn't doing it. Tiger used to show up, and his dad was a sergeant major in the military, and he said, "I would walk into the door, and there was Tiger with two buckets of balls saying, 'Dad, I want to go out and hit.' Trevor met me at the door with his baseball glove and my other boys. I mean, I would walk in from working, and they all wanted to do something. And Trevor wanted to play ball. So you can, my advice is let them pick their sport. Don't push them into it, although, you know, nowadays we got 20 or 12-month sports, you know, swimming, baseball. These are all club sports now. They're not high school sports. But nonetheless, if your son doesn't – I had two swimmers swimming up and down a lane for hours and hours and hours, but my son made it to the collegiate level. He still holds some records at Berkeley. And how do you teach an 8-year-old to go up and down the lines, you know, the black line? And how do you teach a kid to go out to baseball practice every day? They got to want it and push them into that. Don't meet them at the door with the baseball glove and the balls and say, let's go hit some. Now, if you're doing that, maybe he should be, hitting golf balls instead of baseballs. Let him have all different sports. If your kid wants to get recruited, if you're playing two sports, that's fantastic. But nobody plays two sports anymore, unfortunately. You got a 14-month-old, give him the ball, put it in his left hand. That's important.
Yeah.
Put the ball in his left hand and tie his right hand up. But nonetheless, you just got to let the kids do what they got to do, and they're going to find something they love, whether it's playing an instrument or playing pushing a baseball or a soccer ball around. That's my advice. Don't meet them at the door. They're not going to like you for it.
Well, that's beautiful stuff. And to two fathers here, it's meaningful to hear that. We're getting a lot of texts from listeners who are parents, who are hearing this and are inspired. So good on you, Rich. Congrats for the success of your children. And it sounds like, you know, your happiness as a dad is beautiful. And we appreciate getting to know you and getting to know the story very much. And you've given people a reason to root for Trevor that they might not have even had, Cub fans, during the year here.
I appreciate that. Trevor's a great guy. At the Pittsburgh, before the Pittsburgh game, they did a beautiful tribute to him and all the work that he does with his charity, which is Project 34, spinal cord injury patients. He's got a caring guy. He's you know what he is? He's like Rizzo. Rizzo's a stud, a very wonderful guy who loves giving back to the community. You're going to find that about Trevor. Him and his wife, they've got three kids and they're giving back. That's all they do. You guys are going to love Trevor.
You're biased. You're biased, Rich. Come on.
Well, Rich, here's what I'll say. I'd like to figure that out for myself. So maybe you could act as producer and book him for the show. And then I'll be a judge of that myself. All right.
Matt, he's a rocker. You would like him, Matt. He's Eddie Vedder and him communicated. It's a long story. He goes to rock concerts. He's a nut about that stuff.
Oh, there we go. So, yeah, plenty to talk about on this show with Trevor. No, that's perfect.
He's great. Well, I appreciate your time, guys. I know you're trying to get me off. I'll talk about my son all day long.
We know you will. we know. 20 questions with Rich Williams about Trevor. What is his favorite cereal?
Yeah. The final thing is look for me in my Andy Frayne uniform. Okay, I'll be in my Andy Frayne.
Yes. We will look for that. That would be super fun. If you got pictures, you can send those along too, Rich.
I will.
Thanks, right, man. Thank you, Rich. We appreciate it.
Look forward to seeing you again. Thank you, guys.
Absolutely. That's Rich Williams, Trevor Williams' father. Have you ever heard someone beam through a telephone before? Like I've never heard a smile quite like that guy's smile.
Oh, that is amazing. And he's got that added bonus of having survived cancer and realizing he's got a second chance, and he's loving even harder, isn't he? He's just loving even more, communicating even more. Good for him, man. That's wonderful stuff.
Yeah, that was very cool. Don't want to be the richest guy in the cemetery. It's a good lesson, right? Yeah. Especially also when your kid is financially self-sufficient, so you're not worried about like leaving money to your kid, right? That's not a concern. That's a luxury that he's able to have. So he's going to spend his money traveling around the country watching his kid pitch. That's very, very cool.
I found video of Trevor's first win as a Pirate a few years ago, and Trevor comes to the front row to meet his family, and he hugs his son. He hugged his newborn son first. Man, the nerve. Hugging your newborn son before the dad, and there's Rich there in tears off to the side. So the video proof is out there. I mean, he's gone to every start. That's amazing. Good for him. Lucky man.
That's very, very cool. Steve Stone on the White Sox start at 4 o'clock. Will Perdue at 4:40. But your game, Speaks, your game. Even if the teams locally were playing well, sometimes make it a little difficult. You're standing on for your game next on The Score.
Left-handed pinch hitter against the southpaw, Will Smith. Didi pops that one into the opposite field. Ozuna's got it. Bohm's going to try it. Here he comes, and he's safe at the plate. Wow. On a shallow fly ball into left field. They roll the dice with Ozuna's arm.
Shallow left field. The throw.
Wow. Oh, I don't know. Man, it's close. It might have looked like Bohm's foot came up. We'll get some definitive looks at it here.
That's Matt Viskirchen and the owner of the Minnesota Timberwolves on Sunday Night Baseball discussing a blown instant replay on a nationally televised game. You know, just what baseball needed, Speaks.
Yeah.
After a year at which they got 60 games in during a pandemic when the majority of the conversation was about millionaires and billionaires fighting over money. And then they finally get to this season where the majority of the conversation is, you know, the ball's never in play. It's not the best version of our game. It's too slow and boring. You know what they really needed to just make the sport more likable? A good old-fashioned replay controversy on national TV. It just felt like what Rob Manfred and that piece of metal commissioner. It just felt like what the doctor ordered last night, didn't it?
Why review it if you can't overturn it?
But they can overturn it. I watch games. They overturn things all the time. The idea that there's like some sort of preferential treatment to the umpires on the field, they overturn calls all the time. So what was that?
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah. See, that's the thing. I don't believe that this was an instance of wanting to protect their own in the union. I don't believe that. There's no evidence of that whatsoever.
They overturn calls all the time.
Yeah, and as long as you're honest about it and you deal with it, then, you know, people like when you as an entity can admit you're wrong and just make sure you get it right. You know, it's okay. I think they just didn't believe they saw clearly enough that they could overturn. But it's crap. That was pure crap and just a horrific moment. And I think overall, replay's been pretty good. It's just that there are still some real problems. Like, you can't overturn. There are certain things you can't even overturn or review. Like, whether a ball is fair or foul as it crosses first base or third base. Like, if you hit a ball down the line, it's not where it bounces eventually. It's where it is when it crosses first base. And that's not reviewable. Why? There should be a camera right down the line in the same exact spot at every ballpark in America, that in a fixed location, and you should be able to review that. It's not that difficult. So the fact that there are arbitrary things that can't be reviewed, they still have issues. But so we got to tweak it. We got to tweak it and keep fixing it, Danny.
And I listen. You know, I like these conversations. I like the, you know, just because it's been done one way doesn't mean it should be done that way in the future. I like sports that look to change rules, tweak things, improve things.
Yes.
But
do we know what a catch is? How many years did it take to define a catch? And we're still unclear. Obviously.
Right, right. But what I'm saying is once you have the technology and it's the barroom argument. 100 people watch.
Yeah.
100 people see a play. 100 people see safe. They call out. Or 100 people see out. They call safe. The 100 people are right, even if they're not the trained umpire. Because you have to be able to do a better job of communicating what the hell's going on to your audience. And so it's not just the blown call, and it's not just the stoppage, and it's not just that the audience saw one thing, the broadcast saw one thing, and then the call goes the other way. It's that there's no explanation.
Mm-hmm.
Explain to me what you saw. If you're going to do this, you've got to have a degree of transparency on the payoff either way, and that's what continues to be absent from a lot of sports. Yes, but at least in the NBA, you get that guy like staring into the camera and he doesn't ever know where to look, and it's like, oh, are you just talking to Hubie Brown or are you talking to me? And he like you can hear him say what they're seeing. It's very useful. The NFL has gotten much better at that, and I think that that component of it is something that baseball still lags behind in.
Well, they did give their response to the pool reporter. They said
after the game,
the supervisor of the New York replay crew said, quote, After reviewing all relevant angles, the replay official could not definitively determine that the runner failed to touch home plate prior to the fielder applying the tag. The call stands, the runner is safe. So they could not definitively determine that the runner failed. They didn't have definitive video. That vernacular of how it needs to be definitive to overturn the call on the field needs to change. Let this be the added bullet in that gun to... or in the arsenal, the added weapon in the arsenal, to initiate that change. That it shouldn't be, it needs to be definitive to overturn. It needs to be what is clearly the most apparent outcome of the play, or clearly the most apparent result of the play to the eyes in charge. Because you could look at that and say, you can't definitively say he touched, you can't definitively say he didn't touch, but... you can see, you should be able to see enough that you could overturn that. So having to live up to that standard is what needs to change, don't you think?
I guess my thought on replay is, for a long time, I was saying it's ridiculous that I have more technology in my living room than they do at the stadium, right? When the TiVo came out, like if you had TiVo and a 50-inch television, right? You had more information than Ed Hockley. And that just struck me as ridiculous.
And it was.
And it was. But I do think we have reached a point where we have gone, the technology has gotten so good, and we are now reviewing things that are not like righting the egregious wrongs. But we are going away from the spirit of the rule, or like the spirit of how the game is played. Hmm. There's examples in every sport.
Yes.
The baseball one to me that a lot of people disagree with me on.
Sliding over the bag?
Yeah. What if you, for a millisecond, are technically not touching the base, but you beat the throw, you're on the base, but the zoom in camera, the 8K that they can slow motion review Zapruder film style, and It takes 2 minutes to splice it all together to find that perfect angle. And so now you're out. And no, you've been safe for the history of forever. That's safe in college baseball. That's safe in minor league baseball. That's safe in little league baseball. It's safe in every place that doesn't have the HD camera. I hate that that's out in the major leagues, personally.
So you want to put that back in?
I do.
You put that cat back in the bag? What's the right idiom here?
Yeah. Toothpaste back in the tube. Genie back in the bottle.
But that would. I don't want to do that though, because I love when we can see tags and slides that are gorgeous, like Javier Baez or Fernando Tatis with the swim move.
I get it.
And just barely getting their fingers in. I don't want to lose that moment of excellence. I would rather change the base a little bit, put a little handle on it. You want to put a little handle on it so a guy can go? Yeah, well, just like a little bar that you can grab. Just, you know, make it a little more grabbable. They're going to make it bigger, so theoretically you can grab the corner. Why don't one of those corners, or each corner, have a little space underneath so it's easier for a guy sliding to put his fingers underneath, or that kind of thing.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure there'd be unintended consequence of a dude breaking his ankle as he slides in. Ripping
his fingers off his hand, and we have Ronnie Lott situations everywhere.
Right, but if you want to find some way, you want to find some way to make it a little stickier so those things don't happen in terms of oversliding. I understand, but I don't want to lose the majesty of a great tag or slide.
And I don't know that you do, though. Like, to me, the argument is basically, is that a call that is possible to be made with your eyes? Right? That's what I want replay for. Mm. I want replay to right the egregious wrongs, right? Yesterday, it was a call that was possible to be made with their eyes. Replay should be able to get that right. They still got it wrong, but like that was just a bad use of replay. But like over the wall, like, fair or foul, over the wall, not over the wall. Like things that should be able, that are binary, that are yes or no.
Okay.
And so like the other example that I use all the time is basketball. Tipped ball going out of bounds, right?
Great.
You and I both are going for it. Right? We both have a hand on the ball. Your arm is going in the direction of out of bounds, and that is the ball that the direction that the ball goes. You hit the ball out of bounds.
Mm-hmm.
But technically, when you slow motion Zapruder film zoom in, the ball actually was on the tip of my fingernail after you hit the ball out of bounds. In the history of forever with basketball, that's off you and it's my ball. No one in their right mind can see that with their eyes. But now, because of replay, we slow the game down, we stop it, and we realize that even though you hit the ball out of bounds, we know that you hit it out of bounds because physics sent it in the direction of which your hand was going.
Yeah.
It technically touched my fingernail last, so you get rewarded for that simply because of technology. They've never once called it as, oh yeah, no, that actually was technically off of your fingernail and replays confirmed it. It's always they overturn it in that direction.
So it's cool when I slap the basketball out of your hands and it hits your knee and goes out of bounds.
Correct.
I get that steal.
Yes.
But I don't get it when I slap it out of your hands, but it hits your fingertip as it goes out. I disagree. Good for you. You made a great play.
But it's not skill, though, right? It's not slapped it clean. It's not discernible to the human eye. And as long as we are going to have human beings out there, mm-hmm. and like again, I can't articulate it any better than if you are playing the sport at a level where you didn't have replay, common sense would indicate, right, for the history of the sport, the runner is safe, the ball is off you, in the two examples I just gave. But now technology, HD camera, zoom in, we stop the game, it takes 3 or 4 minutes, we debate it, 60% of people feel one way, 40% of people feel the other, and the call is made the other way. I don't know that that is making sports better. Or are we just slowing it down and becoming beholden to the technology? It might never happen. We might never be able to put the tube back in the toothpaste as we work around these analogies. But I think that this is a point in time where we've become, we have such great technology, man, and I don't think it overall makes sports better. I don't want to eliminate replay entirely because you have to be able to right the egregious wrongs.
Right. So here's what we need every offseason is, look, the NFL has done a good job with the competition committee in continuing to work on it and tweak it. Frankly, I know it's still frustrating, and it's frustrating every year, and they went too long, but you have to keep tweaking it. You have to keep changing what is reviewable, what is not. I think a ball down the line as it goes over the base, fix cameras, high-def cameras down each line, and you should be able to do that. We saw it with the Michael Conforto play that, you know, all they could review was whether it hit him or not. That's all they could review, and if it did hit him, fine, but they couldn't review whether he leaned out and the ump blew it, whether it was going to be a strike anyway, which it was, and that is illegal. You know, like they couldn't review those parts. You have to be able to review those parts. So you have to change every year in the offseason. You have to gather and redefine what is reviewable and redefine how to do it as you keep tweaking and getting towards a theoretical end game where it is clearly a net positive. I mean, it's a net positive now, but you want an even more, whatever percentage net positive you want.
It is a net positive because it does, for the most part, right the egregious wrongs. It is a net positive. I'm not saying abolish replay, but it's moments like yesterday are really frustrating because it feels like they actually didn't right an egregious wrong when they should have. Slowed down the game, confused their audience, didn't explain to us what our eyes were seeing, and, oh yeah, by the way, there are all of these other examples of us being beholden to the technology and not really fixing the spirit of the rule. I honestly think there was a point in time where I had more technology than in Hockley, and now they have way too much technology. Slow down, 17 different camera angles, mm-hmm. zoom in. Man, if you can't overturn the call in 30 seconds, then call stands.
All right, so this is interesting. So you want to get rid of the slow motion on the replay?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
You just want to have like all right, here, show it again. You see it? Okay, great. Yeah, and if you don't see it, okay, you're toast.
To be able to call it with your eyes as long as there are human beings out there. If we can get to a point where we have robots everywhere, then I'm cool with it. But we're not there.
What about the binary things that still might need to be slowed down? When a home run goes just over the painted yellow line that delineates a home run in some ballparks on an enormous wall. So you really have to slow those down to see, did the ball clear it like Hawkeye in tennis, where you're seeing whether you need a slow-mo to see whether it's above or below a line. What about that?
Tennis, by the way, the only sport that has perfected replay. Tennis replay is perfect.
Because of those fixed perfect HD cameras that they turn into animation immediately.
Everything's
and
binary.
And there's just no question. Well, yeah, there's a limit to how many things actually could be reviewed
Correct.
In tennis.
Correct.
They've got a nail.
Yeah.
So where are you on something that's on or over a line?
I guess I don't have a problem with slowing it down for that purpose because it is, again, it's binary. And you could say, well, did he tag him or not, or did he come off the base or not? But
yeah.
but it's a defined line, a demarcation on the field, right? It's not the human skill of tag. And again, the jersey thing just coming off the base bothers me. Like, it's just a he beat the throw, he got there, he was on the base, he's slid. Like, if your hand comes off the base and you are entirely off the base,
mm-hmm.
bad slide.
Okay, but I think you have that is clear. Like, a fixed line is a different thing than a human skill. So you could build that in. You could build in that possibility for it.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right. I'm with you on that possible way to make replay more human, to make it a little more sensible in that way. And you only get 30 seconds or a minute to make the call in that way.
Yeah, I just, if you can't see it quickly, don't overturn it. Stop wasting my time. Because clearly, by the way, they still get things wrong. That's the thing. If we were getting every call right with replay, and you're like, oh, you know what? I feel like 100% of the calls that go to replay are correct. Well, then okay. Because then you could tell me that. But there's nobody can be watching sports these days and tell mm-hmm. me that they agree with 100% of the decisions or anywhere close to that that are being made by instant replay. So there's still some significant flaws in the system. We got Steve Stone at 4 o'clock. We got Will Perdue at 4:40. We'll set up the Sox conversation a little bit with the best pitcher in town next on The Score.
Why don't we talk about the real issue here? Robots.
Robots would help. We'll talk to Steve Stone, not about that, but about whatever. Mostly baseball. Coming up at 4 o'clock, just a few minutes. And you called him the best pitcher in town earlier. It's hard to argue with it. Michael Kopech, Spiegs, 6 1/3 innings, so he's recorded 19 outs this year. He's allowed one hit, two walks, 11 strikeouts. That goes out to a .47 whip. And 15.5 strikeouts per nine. Pretty good. Do you think Michael Kopech starts a game this year?
Great question. I think that answer is yes. The way he talked about it, especially yesterday, he was asked, could he do a few more innings? He said, yeah, anytime at this point, I could stretch it out and do a few more. He was. I think the context might have been even a longer go or like a piggyback start, but I suspect that, yes, he will. He will get a start. If they see that spot upcoming and they feel okay about the rest of the bullpen, I could see them just having him be the long guy who makes the spot start and gives them 4 or 5 innings of a game like that. So, interesting. It only took him 26 pitches to get 7 outs yesterday. He's finding a way. Even though he's striking out everybody, he's being pretty damn efficient right now, because he's throwing lots of strikes.
That helps. Everything. That helps. Here's Michael Kopech on what he's doing this year.
Like most situations, just doing what you can control. If there's runners on, your job is still primarily to get that out at the plate. The only real difference is if I'm throwing out of the windup or stretch, because I started using my windup again more. But as far as mindset goes, I'm on attack. And, you know, I've been talking to a few guys about that and talked to Lance a little bit after his last outing. And just the ability to go out there and attack every pitch kind of puts you in the control.
I'm rooting for him. I think he's the most interesting pitcher in Chicago, not just from the skill set, but the whole story and what he means to the White Sox future and what he's gone through. And it's been awesome to see him this year. So whether he starts or not this year, immaterial, I still think that is his future for the White Sox. But if he doesn't, whew. Talk about a guy who could be just unfair out of the bullpen. Everyone knows his slider looks to me like it's unhittable. I know it isn't. And I know he's more known for his fastball. But his slider is just preposterous this year.
It absolutely is. And when you're as good as him and it's multiple pitches looking that good, it compounds itself, Danny, because they work off of each other.
Right.
The slider makes the fastball better. The fastball makes the slider better. It's just... It is unfair is what it is when you are that good and when the control is there. So he's special right now. We saw the humanity in Garrett Crochet yesterday. We've heard the humanity in Michael Kopech verbally many, many times. But right now as a pitcher, we're not seeing humanity. We're seeing robot excellence.
So the bullpen won't be this bad. Steve Stone, though, gives us more specific analysis on the Sox pen and more next on The Score.